Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in, however you're listening. Welcome to the program. And by the way, for those of you who are celebrating, happy Walpurgisnacht, which is occurring this evening. You don't know what I'm talking about? It's a holiday, a Walpurgisnacht. No, I'm not very good at pronouncing German words, but it's derived from various pagan spring customs. During Walpurgisnacht, which occurs tonight and then tomorrow, of course, is May Day. But during the celebration, bonfires are built to keep away the dead and chaotic spirits, that were said to walk among the living back when, this holiday was put together. The celebration is named after a woman named Saint Walpurga, who was born in the 8th century. I'm not sure what it was that she did, but she became a saint. She was sanctified. The Walpurga originally was honored in the same way that the Vikings had celebrated spring. And as the Vikings stomped around Europe, the two dates became mixed together and created the Walpurgis Night celebration. So here we are. The bonfires are built to keep the dead and chaotic spirits away. You know, they're no fun. And then the next day, the return of light and the sun is celebrated during May Day. Although some traditions hold that bonfires and witches are more closely associated with Easter. And bonfires alone with midsummer in Finland. Anyway, Saint Walpurga herself was the niece of Saint Boniface. And according to legend, a daughter of the Saxon prince Saint Richard. she and her brothers traveled to Franconia, Germany, where she became a nun and lived in a convent, which was founded by her brother Willibald. Walpurga died of an illness shortly after moving the mortal remains of her brother, Saint Winibald, in 779. Actually, on 25 February 779. She therefore is listed in the Roman Martyrology under 25th of February. So if you want to go online, look up Roman Martyrology. You'll find Saint Walpurga there. Walpurgis Night or Walpurgisnacht is when witches meet on the Brocken Mountain, and hold revels with their gods. Brocken is the highest of the Harz Mountains of north central Germany. It is noted for the phenomenon of the Brocken Specter. And for witches' revels, which reputedly took place there on Walpurgisnacht. Now, if you're an opera fan, of course, you know that there's a scene in Goethe's Faust, Part One. It's called Walpurgisnacht, and at least that's what it says here. I'm no big opera fan. In some parts of northern coastal regions of Germany tonight, the custom of lighting huge Beltane fires is still kept alive to celebrate the coming of May. Yada, 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 yada. So anyway, there you go. Oh, by the way, Adolf Hitler, with several members of his staff, and including Joseph Goebbels, committed suicide on Walpurgisnacht In 1945, at the same time of his suicide, the Russians had already closed in about several hundred meters from his bunker, and Hitler did not want to be captured. However, the coincidence of the day has been used to argue for an occult initiation of Herr Hitler. There you have it. All right. So we have another holiday tonight. This one is Walpurgisnacht. Walpurgisnacht. When you're finished listening to the program tonight, light your bonfire. It's kind of like the Burning Man Festival, right? Light your bonfire. News today about the drug trade in Florida. No, not reefer cocaine. And this cleared up for me why Limbaugh really closed his New York residences. He said it was because, we're not going to sit around here and wait for this tax increase, 8% sales. That had nothing to do with it. He moved into his multi-million dollar mansion in Florida. Because the nation's biggest supplier of illegal OxyContin drugs now, which is Russia's drug of choice, is being dispensed by so-called pain clinics in Florida. There are more pain clinics in Florida than there are boob bars or massage parlors. And the Florida State Attorney General has finally decided to take some action, and so have the feds. So there are lots of raids going on, which is just going to ruin everything for the pig man. 24 people arrested last week, according to police, are just a piece of an underground network of drug pushers operating these pain clinics around Broward County, which is just south of where the pig man lives. The alleged drug pushers come from Kentucky. They say they're going down there to get some pills and to get some teeth. They get their pills in South Florida legally. They go to these pain clinics legally. Hi, I've got pain. Well, here you are. Here, you want, how many bags you want? Oh, I got a lot of pain. Here you are. Then they sell them on the streets in Kentucky and wherever they can find Limbaugh. According to police officers and judges, this practice has become an epidemic. There's that word again. Damn. Broward Circuit Judge Marcia Beach said, quote, it's extremely frustrating. And I must say, as a person who's a Florida native, I'm embarrassed, end quote. Is that where Limbaugh had to go into court and say, well, it was my pain. It was my back pain. That's why I'm taking OxyContin's. Wait, I'm going to go into drug rehab. I'm going to go pet the donkey, pet the pony. When I come out, I will be fine. When I come out, I'll be fine. According to the authorities in Florida, that state does not have a prescription drug monitoring statute. So it's been easy for the so-called pain management clinics to open shop. What do you want to bet that that's where he's going now? When he got caught, it was because he was turning out his, in a manner of speaking, his maid or his gopher woman or whatever she did. I don't know, but he had her going to, what was it, Waffle House parking lots, Kathy, or, Denny's parking lots, where the poor woman would stand there with her shopping bag and wait for the guys from Kentucky, I guess, to drive up. Hey, you work for Rush? Yes, I do. Here, take this. Take it back. Where's the money? Here. God. Anyway, there's a bill in the Florida House now to create a system that would track the prescribing and dispensing of OxyContin. And it's up for a vote as early as next week, and a prescription drug monitoring program, if it passes, would alert the state when large quantities of drugs are purchased. Well, there you go, Rush, out of the frying pan into the fat, right? Huh? Oh my goodness, you left because what now? You left New York because taxes were high? Well, what are you going to do now, pig man? Ow! Hey, listen, Rush has so much money, he could open up his own OxyContin factory. Probably has. That's why he makes all those trips to the Dominican Republic. That and, the age of consent in the Dominican Republic, I think, is 12. And God. All right, We have some topics that are not quite as serious as the pig man and his pills coming up here in just a moment. Republicans are trying to remake their party. Guess how they're going to do it. Oh, my God. We'll talk about that. And also more from the front lines of the of the swine flu. I guess we're supposed to call it swine flu now. We have our first case in Georgia. As a matter of fact, it was fairly close to here. Someone who went to Atlanta, went to a mall, went back home to Carrollton, Georgia, which is where Newt Gingrich used to teach college, and then came down with, I think she's still in an ICU unit in Carrollton, Georgia. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Recommend sticking your foot in your mouth at any time you feel free. Swallow it down. Check it out. It feels so good. Swing it stone. Wait until the dust settles.
He's not ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
Nobody was ever gonna get sized down. 21 past the hour. Oh, the other big item of the day as far as television television cable news and two of the nightly newscasts that I saw, and this is just so typical, isn't it? Joe Biden, this morning on the Today Show on NBC's the Today, was it NBC? I think so. Today Show. No. ABC. Oh, hell, I don't know. Whatever the morning programs are. He was asked by the, anchor dude, you know, whether or not, you know, what advice would you give your family, Mr. Vice President, if they decide to get on an airplane and go to Mexico? And Biden just said, well, he said, in the first place, I'd tell them not to get on an airplane. Or he went on, or a subway car, you know, where you you're in a closed environment. Somebody sneezes on an airplane, it goes all through the airplane. That is, unless you travel AirTran, because AirTran allows, you know, circulated air in. But, He went on to say that, you know, this, he qualified. He said, this is how I feel. This is, you know, he's answering the question. The question was, what would you say to your family? Well, this is what I would say to my family, you know, and I would expect that my family would say it to me. Same thing. He said, you know, if you're out in the field and somebody sneezes, no big deal. But if you're in a closed environment and somebody sneezes with this damn virus, or epidemic or pandemic or, you know, Mr. Death stalking the earth right now. What else are you going to tell your family? Don't get into enclosed places right now. The crowd of people. Whoa, that's really weird, Joe. Television scoops up an honest comment like that and says it's further proof that Biden is a goofball who constantly commits what television calls gaffes. Oh, for Christ's sake. Can you imagine if somebody would have said to Brian Williams, hey, Brian, what would you tell your daughters or your wife or your family if they decide they want to get on an airplane and go to Mexico? What would you say there, Brian? So immediately, all of a sudden, television paints this comment as though Joe Biden single-handedly was trying to sink the transportation industry. Now, to make matters worse, then after Biden makes a normal statement that anyone would make, and television picks it up and starts battering whoever's watching television, and that's a lot of people during the day, just battering the public with this comment. Then Biden's spokesman comes out fairly quickly and says, well, no, that's not what the vice president meant. What he meant was if, you know, people who are sick. So in other words, instead of his spokeswoman coming out and saying, look, will you people just kiss our collective asses? Okay. We've got some serious problems. Biden was asked, the vice president was asked what he would tell his family. Now go play with some other little doll today and leave us alone. We got business to do. But no, she didn't do that. She came out and made sure that the story would make it to the evening network news. Way to go, Biden spokeswoman. Don't you know where you are living these days? You are living with a crackhead media that has absolutely no business reporting on anything, much less a comment, a throwaway comment that Biden made about what he would say to his family. You saw that press conference the other night. You see these press briefings every day where Robert Gibbs has to stand up there and answer the most inane, half-witted, jerk-ass questions. This is coming from the crack White House press corps who have a chance in these press briefings to ask questions that the spokesperson for the person who happens to be the most powerful human being on earth, and getting answers. So what do they ask?
Well, did Joe Biden really mean only his family was saying that? Or, you know, what do you mean? Come on, Robert, tell us here. America wants to know.
So the top Republican leaders today offered a first look at plans to remake their party. They have something. Newt Gingrich had something called the Contract with America, which immediately was changed to Contract on America by those of us who were, you know, in the know. Those of us who know Newt Gingrich know what a hypocritical little twit he really is. And a pseudo-intellectual of the worst kind. You know, he attempts constantly to talk over people because he is so superior. But he called his little collection of freaks the Contract on America. And the American public bought it and sent 75 members of Congress to 75 Republicans to Congress in 1994 in the election that year, the off-year election. Well, the new one is called the National Council for a New America. More about this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
The Hindenburg was a giant Zeppelin. Its makers made a minor oversight. Before they filled it up with explosive gas, they should have fixed the no-smoking light. History is made by stupid people. Clever people wouldn't even try. If you want a place in the history books, then do something dumb before you die. Tally ho!
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Well, actually, it's more than 50,000 watts. We have a whole satellite. It is 25 before the hour. So anyway, the top Republican leaders, that would be Rush Limbaugh, Joe the Plumber, Sarah Palin, and a whole clutch of members of Congress and former members of Congress have decided it's time to remake the Republican Party. They have put together an organization called the National Council for a New America. If that doesn't sound like something right out of the Brezhnev or Khrushchev playbook, I don't know what does. But anyway, National Council for a New America. They released a letter that is signed by 14 congressional Republican leaders. And interestingly, it speaks volumes about what they're trying to run away from, at least in public. And because the letter makes no mention of same-sex marriage or immigration or abortion or any of those nasty little issues to the Republicans and the brain-dead followers that have so divided the country. The Republicans have used those issues for the past how many years since Nixon to get elected to various offices.
Well, vote for me, and I will make sure that the queers do not destroy real marriage. You know, what they want to do is not real marriage. It's sinful. Or vote for me, and I will guarantee you. Excuse me. I'm in a church. I didn't. I will guarantee you that I will bring to an end the murder of millions upon millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of the unborn. Of course, none of this ever happens, but the knuckle draggers have for the past 35 or 40 years said, well, maybe this time. So now the Republicans' National Council for a New America outlines five areas of policy that they are going to focus on. Four of them are within the borders of the United States. They are solutions for the economy, affordable health care, energy something or other, and low taxes. That's the other one. Now, who's involved in this? House Minority, according to Ben Smith, writing at Politico.com, House Minority Whip Eric Cantor, who sounds like he belongs in a synagogue. Honest to God, he does. Somebody with the name Cantor. Come on, Eric. Go sing. I mean, really. You are such a creep. Every time you open your mouth, you really are. I don't know. Be a singer. Get out of politics, will you? Anyway, he's the House Minority Whip. Eric is, and John McCain, they both laid out the details of this group, the National Council for a New America, in a conference call with reporters today. McCain added that he hoped to attract independents. Yeah, that's going to happen. You had them at one time, you dumbass, and you guys lost them. Oh, and like-minded Democrats. Now, let's see. Who would that be? That would be Democrats who want more war, more poverty, fewer number of people insured than we already have, more jobs going, I don't know, to the moon. Like-minded Democrats? Are you serious? No, that's right. This comes from McCain. Okay. So what they're going to do, they're going to hold a series of public forums, or as we were taught in Latin, fora, around the country. The first of which will be held this weekend. Great, great timing. It's supposed to be a gorgeous weekend in spring, but no, a lot of like-minded Democrats and independents are going to gather in halls around the country and listen as McCain and Piyush Jindal and Haley Barbour talk about the National Council for a New America. We absolutely upchucked on and destroyed the former America. We beat it into a shapeless mass. We've turned the country into a terrorist state that's in debt up to its hairline. We have done all of this, and now we are going to put together a National Council for a New America. Hiya, hiya, hiya. Step right up, folks, for the price of, just a couple of dollars. Come on in. See the bearded lady. See the alligator boy. Step up, ladies and gentlemen. Hiya, hiya.
We've heard this before. The group has an advisory board. Mitt Romney, Jeb Bush, Haley Barbour, Piyush, and McCain. And the group promises to, quote,
listen to, partner with, and empower the American people with ideas and solutions that speak directly to the needs of our great nation.
The conference call with reporters with Cantor and McCain resulted in no offers of what that would be. But, you know, we've seen that movie, too. Cantor.
Eric Cantor, House Minority Whip, who apparently is the driving force behind the group, said, quote,
The council will be the forum for an all-inclusive debate. Oh, yeah? And wide-open policy discussion. Really? Wow, man. Where do I sign up? And our focus is the economy, healthcare, education, energy, and national security. McCain, who, you know, felt like he was being pushed out of the conference call, had to jump in and say, this is not a contract with America. This is a conversation with America, you know, referring to Newt's former former comic book pact. Yeah, contract with America. Yeah, how's that going, America? Huh? How are we doing with the contract on America that was put together, oh, my goodness, only 15 years ago? How's that coming? Huh? Yeah, we're doing just great, aren't we? Of the 7 or 9 or 3 or 27 or whatever of features of the contract with America, the Republicans fulfilled absolutely zero, zilch, zip, nothing. But it made for great marketing back in the bad old days in 1994 when the country was heading into its longest period of profitability and no war in the history of the Republic, unless you count that little thing with NATO over in Yugoslavia. You know, we don't talk about that. So here they go again. I'll tell you what, boys, you right-wing jackasses, if you want to remake your party, stop making videos that equate the Obama administration with fear and terror. The new one you have up on the internet is really a pisser. I got to tell you, boys, you know, you got pictures of, you know, with that weird music in the background. Boom. And they got images of burning buildings and Barack Obama shaking hands with, you know, foreign leaders that really want to invade us. We all know that Hugo Chavez wants to come to the United States and rape all of our men and enslave all of our women and eat all of our children. We all know this. But there's pictures of Barack Obama shaking. No. And at the very end, something just flew into my throat. At the very end of the video, on this black screen, oh, up comes the question, do you feel safer, America? Oh, my God. So they're going to, I'll tell you something else you could do, too, if you want to remake your party. Stop posting photos like this Ohio Republican, the Hamilton County, Ohio Republican Party chairman, Alex Triantafilou, puts up on his website a picture of the little hairless Dr. Evil from the Austin Power movies right next to a picture of the bald Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter. Now, of course, Specter was bald at the time because he was undergoing chemotherapy, partly for brain tumor. But you see, this is what Republicans do. This is what Republicans do. And he had a post up, this Ohio Republican had a post up, which has since been taken down, that said, quote, for those that think the party left Specter, they're not paying attention. Specter's not a moderate. He's a liberal. He is certainly not conservative. We'll be better off as a party when we stand for something that matters. Senator Specter stands for nothing. And then they have a picture of Arlen Specter, bald from chemotherapy, next to little Dr. Evil from Austin Powers. And the juxtaposition of these two photographs speaks volumes of what the Republican Party is about. We'll be right back.
is the outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malone.
Ten before the hour, a National Council for a New America. Jesus, I can hardly wait. I'm so on that. National Council for a New America. It's going to be run by Mitt Romney, Jeb Bush, Haley Barbour, Piyush Jindal, John McCain, Eric Cantor, and just a whole clutch of people. I'm sure Sarah Palin will wind up. Well, no, not with McCain there. Probably not. They little brother-sister act they had going during the campaign, that's kind of been flushed. Have you noticed that? Huh? Right? Meanwhile, for those of you who are keeping track, remember, we are involved in two wars. Can you believe that? Yeah! We got two wars going. Well, British troops have said they've had enough. The UK is out of there. They ended 6 years. 6 years of combat operations in Iraq today by striking their colors and withdrawing from the southern city of Basra after a bloody and costly mission, the AP says, that was deeply unpopular at home. Prime Minister Gordon Brown said, today marks the closing chapter of the combat mission in Iraq. And as far as the 179 British service personnel killed in Iraq since the 2003 U.S.-led invasion and occupation, Mr. Brown said, quote, they will always be remembered for the service they have given. Our country owes them a huge debt of gratitude. And then he added, for some reason, quote, today Iraq is a success story. We owe much of that to the efforts of British troops. Our mission has not always been an easy one. Many have said that we would fail. End quote. Brown apparently had a meeting with the Prime Minister of Iraq. That would be, is it still Maliki? Is it? Is it still al-Maliki? He also met with other Iraqi ministers, including the oil minister. They were in London to attend an investment conference with about 250 companies, including Royal Dutch Shell and Rolls-Royce. Jesus, God. Yeah, well, of course, you know. Al-Maliki, speaking through a translator, called the assembled press people, quote, yes, there are people in Iraq who want the government to fail, but our army and security forces are ready and qualified to face the challenges, end quote. Prime Minister Brown said Britain would work on new oil exploration in the Persian Gulf to help protect Iraq's vital oil industry. Oh, really? Is that how you put it? Okay. Now, about 400 British troops are expected to remain in Iraq to help train naval officers and assist with patrols around oil platforms. Okay. So the Brits have said, been there, done that, got the T-shirt, we're gone. In the meantime, the level of violence and blood in the streets of Iraq continues to escalate every single week. It just gets worse and worse and worse. I'd like to know what successes Prime Minister Brown or Commandant Ray Odierno, our military proconsul who is in Iraq, or what the president of the United States, Barack Obama, what are these people talking about when they talk about the success story of Iraq? Exactly what are they talking about? You know, George Bush, 2,000 days ago, declared mission accomplished. Was it 2,000 days ago? It was back, wasn't it back in 70, or 93, 90? Come on, Mike, you've got to stay away from the cough medicine. Late 2003, middle of 2003, here we are, middle of 2009. That's almost 2,000 days, isn't it? So what success story are they talking about? Sunnis are being butchered, as well as Shia. It is exactly what was predicted. The country is involved and will continue to be, and it will get worse in a religiously violent upheaval between these two factions of Islam, and they will not stop. The murder bath will go on and on and on. This is kind of like, you know, Marshal Tito and the old Slavic Confederation, Yugoslavia. He held together. Marshal Tito was nominally a communist, but he held together five or six disparate and different ethnic groups into Greater Yugoslavia, and once he died, wham! It all stopped, and there was lots of fighting and bloodshed and some NATO bombs until finally we have what we have over there now, right? So why is Iraq any different? Remember, the Kurds have more or less partitioned off northern Iraq. That's not going to last too much longer, is it? Huh? What success are they talking about? I just wish I knew. I wish I were smart enough to understand what they're talking about. Because I look at it, and I see day after day after day a report of car bombs and truck bombs and bodies and body parts and gore and death and destruction. And then I hear about the oil minister of Iraq is in London talking with Rolls-Royce about what? Opening a car lot? Or making engines. So, you know, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It's just hell being an ignorant talk show host. I wish I knew more. I should have stayed in school. I should have. I really should have. I should have stayed in school.
Welcome back.
Thanks for sticking around. It's going to get very, very nasty on this program in about 7 past the hour. So it's going to get very nasty right after the break at the bottom of the hour. Trust me on that, okay? It is going to get very, very nasty and kind of, you know, oh, my God, why is he talking about this? I'm going to toss my dinner. But we have a very, very special Uncle Mike Story Corner for you about hog flu, swine flu, whatever you want to call it, written by, who's the author of this? Oh, yeah, Al Giordano. So stick around. Uncle Mike Story Corner coming up in about 30 minutes. Well, maybe not. Okay, look, it's your call. You might not want to stick around for that. Get the kids and old ladies out of the room when we do get to Uncle Mike Story Corner tonight. And the old men, too. And the young men. And the young women, you can stick around. This little thing, this story, I've got to do this. I know y'all hate it when I do this, but I got to do this. This National Organization for Marriage that has enlisted, Miss California, the woman with the pneumatic boobs who made the, weird statement the other night during the pageant when she was asked by, she gave the wrong answer to the person who asked her the question, but it had to do with gay marriage and, or marriage. See, I don't like that term. I don't like the term gay marriage. There is no such thing. There's marriage. She was asked a question about marriage for people who happen to be of the same sex. And, you know, she stumbled around, fumbled around, not as bad as Miss South Carolina did in that, what was that, Miss Teenage America, whatever the hell that contest was a few years ago, where she was talking about the children in Iraq or something. I don't know. But anyway, this woman, Carrie, how do you say her name? Is that French? Prigent? Carrie, or you know, I would say Prigin. But Carrie Prigin now is involved in an ad campaign against marriage equality. And People for the American Way sent out a press release today. And it said in part, quote, at the National Organization for Marriage. How about that? National Organization for Marriage. Wait a minute. And the Republicans are doing National Council for a New America. And here we have the National Organization for Marriage. Hot damn, boy, these people are just, woo! If the National Organization for Marriage, it says here, wants to make the comments of a gossip columnist and a beauty queen the subject of a national debate, the gossip columnist being the judge who asked her the question. And isn't he, aren't they a pair? Anyway, if the National Organization for Marriage wants to make the comments of a gossip columnist and a beauty queen the subject of a national debate, then it should answer for the bizarre and troubling remarks of its most prominent board member, best-selling science fiction writer Orson Scott Card. Wow, I must be out of it, man, with science fiction. It used to be my favorite genre of books. I've never heard of Orson Scott Card. Oh, well. The press release goes on. The NOM has argued that it is not a homophobic organization. But Orson Scott Card's remarks suggest otherwise. Card, who represents the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on the board, and received an effusive welcome last week from NOM President Maggie Gallagher. Isn't she a columnist? Card supports criminalizing sex between same-sex adults. He said, quote, laws against homosexuality behavior should remain on the books. Mr. Card, the Supreme Court has ruled other... Oh, never mind. To be used when necessary to send a clear message that those who flagrantly violate society's regulations of sexual behavior cannot be permitted to remain as acceptable equal citizens. End quote. What does that mean, you psychopathic son of a bitch? What is that? What are you saying here? Are you saying, Orson Scott Card? Are you saying, it cannot be permitted, people who are same sex and love each other and do things together cannot be permitted to remain as acceptable equal citizens? Remain? What are you talking about? Are you talking about killing them? Are you talking about deporting them? Are you talking about burning them at the stake? What are you talking about, you psychopathic bastard? Huh? Oh, excuse me. Oh, Card also has advocated overthrowing the government, our government, if same-sex marriage is permitted. Jesus Christ, these people. What do you want to bet Orson Scott Card is a closeted, suppressed homosexual who cannot deal with the fact that his way of loving is not accepted by his filthy church? What do you want to bet? And therefore, he's probably been gay his entire life because it is something that one is, not something that one becomes. And since he's been gay all his life, and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints nailed this poor sucker as soon as he popped out of his mama's womb and has been liquefying his brain ever since, poor Orson Scott Card has done what so many of these people do when they're confronted with who they are and who they're told to be. They have a complete goddamn nervous breakdown. And that's what Orson Scott Card obviously is having. Here's what he said. How long before married people answer the dictators thus? Regardless of law, marriage has only one definition. And any government that attempts to change it is my mortal enemy. I will act to destroy that government and bring it down so it can be replaced with a government that will respect and support marriage.
And help me raise my children in a society where they will expect to marry in their turn. The little bastards.
Biological imperative trumps the laws.
American government cannot fight against marriage and hope to endure. If the Constitution is defined in such a way as to destroy the privileged position of marriage, it is that insane Constitution, not marriage, that will die.
Do you like that? That's a direct quote. That's what Miss Boobjob, Miss California, who got all injected up with saline or whatever the hell they use these days by the committee that brings these freaks on stage, these baby doll looking freaks who parade up and down. You know, instead of asking them questions about world peace, just ask them what their middle names are. I mean, that's hard enough, for Christ's sake. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. This is a guy, and I'll bet you anything, that he cannot deal with his own sexual orientation. This is usually what happens. Usually when people can't deal with their own sexual orientation, if they're men, they go out and beat up people like, oh, pick a name, Matthew Shepard, there's a name, leave him hanging on a fence in Wyoming so they can go back and say, God damn, I messed up back queer, didn't I, huh? That means I'm heterosexual. I'm not queer. Hell no. What a shame. What an awful shame. I will act to destroy that government and bring it down. Any government that allows people to get married who don't happen to be like this evil, snotty son of a bitch, Orson Scott Card. Orson Scott Card. Mass killers always have three names, don't they? This guy obviously is a mass killer who just hasn't found his real calling yet. So Orson Scott Card and Carrie Prejean. A beauty queen and a Mormon freak who advocates overthrowing the government if the government, and violence and all sorts of stuff. And violence against people, same-sex people who go get married. Yeah, yeah. Laws against homosexual behavior should be made out of the books to be used when necessary to send a clear message that those who flagrantly violate society's regulation of sexual permission or behavior cannot be permitted to remain. Oh, my God. I got a couple emails today from people who read my blog at MikeMalloy.com and said, do you really feel that way about religion? Yes. Oh, my God, yes.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Bob in Miami writes in about the National Council for a New America. This new Republican, we're going to make everything right organization. Bob writes, Mike, did you say the Jebster is involved in this? Jeb Bush, the same Jeb Bush who is a founding member of the Project for a New American-ish Century? What a coincidence that the names of these two organizations are so similar. Project for a New American Century and National Council for a New America. Oh, goody! More wars! Oh, that's cool. That is so cool, Jeb. Thanks, Bob. That is so cool. More wars, more death, more destruction, more blood. Let's see. What can we do? I know. Let's invade China because they have gold. It's all ours, but, you know, they have it. Madness never stops. From Pray 2. Did we dodge the bullet this time? This is a perfect lead-in to Uncle Mike's Story Corner, which will come up right after this break. So this is what Pray 2 says. The media are starting to talk about the dollar cost of a major flu pandemic. Actually, they are recirculating the numbers the Congressional Budget Office created in response to the bird flu scare a couple of years ago. In a severe outbreak with 75 million sickened and 2 million dead in the U.S., they estimate the cost at about $700 billion of gross domestic product. Worldwide, the cost would be $4 trillion of GDP. The Congressional Budget Office estimated that would push us into a major recession. Unfortunately, we are already experiencing this level of decline, and this would not just be added on, but tend to multiply the declining numbers. The CBO is also using pretty low infection numbers. If this really is a 1918 event, the infection rate would be twice as high, and the death rate would be much higher. Then there are other factors they did not address. The tendency of this kind of virus is to strike down people in their prime rather than the elderly and the very young who are passed over. It could create as many orphans as there are dead, which would further strain resources. They did not factor in the permanent loss of productivity from the loss of this many workers in their prime. The consequences of the breakdown of essential services during the pandemic are also not included in the estimates. For example, firefighters, police, and medical workers are in the likely affected group. People confined in institutions, prisons, and nursing homes would be at risk of neglect or abandonment. A breakdown of society from widespread panic could far outstrip the direct costs and lead to other disease outbreaks, and so on, and so on, and so on. And let's not even get into the potential effects on the military. By the way, there is corporate pressure, Prairie 2 writes, being put on the media to stop calling it swine flu. It's bad for business. The corporation responsible for this outbreak has nearly a million hogs confined in its operation in Mexico and would rather you didn't associate all the deaths with them. The good news is that so far nobody infected outside of Mexico has died. The child in Texas came from Mexico. It is possible that the version of this strain of swine flu that is spreading human to human is not as virulent as the hog to human version. We'll know in a few days if we really dodged the bullet. If we dodged the bullet this time. From Prairie 2. You can go to his website, prairienumeral2.com, prairienumeral2.com, and enter into debate with him, I guess. Huh? He's got a comment section there. Go there. Damn it. Go there. Go to prairie2.com. Check him out. Check him out. What I'm going to share with you, a bunch of people sent this to me today. I'll just take the email from Art. I know you talked a lot about this whole flu issue last night, Art writes, and I'm sure the crazies are out there with all kinds of conspiracy theories, but I found something far more practical. Today's Hoffmania blog, a very good one, by the way, refers to an article written by Al Giordano. He's the guy at narconews.com, and he seems to have considerable credibility. He's written for The Nation, The Utney Reader, and so on and so forth. This particular article, which is very heavily and properly referenced, speaks about the misadventures of Smithfield Farms and their EPA fines back in the mid-80s and NAFTA. Needless to say, MSNBC reported today the mantra of the impossibility of a relationship between corporate malfeasance and the introduction of disease into society. Art. Well, Art's right. Excuse me, and everybody else who sent me a link to this, and you are legion today. We're going to share this with you when we come back. And again, I mean, it starts kind of slow, this article by Giordano, in terms of the ick factor, but it builds to a rather unnerving climax. So get the old people and the kids out of the room. All right, we'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I look inside myself and see my heart is black. I see my red door, I must have it made to black.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey-free zone.
Twenty-five before the hour. Thanks to everybody who's notified me. Breaking news all over the place. I do keep a CNN monitor on in the background here, but thanks. I appreciate it. Justice Souter on the Supreme Court has announced tonight that he's going to retire. A George Herbert Walker Bush appointee, Souter, of course, became what is considered these days to be liberal on the court. So this would be Barack Obama's chance to, nominate someone. All right, 25 before the hour, and it is time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Okay, kiddies, y'all comfortable? And get the hell out of the room. Tonight's Uncle Mike Story Corner is for Mommy and Daddy. You can go in the other room with Grandpa and Grandma and eat fudge. Tonight's Uncle Mike Story Corner is entitled How the NAFTA Flu Exploded. It's written by Al Giordano. U.S. and Mexican authorities claim that neither knew about the swine flu outbreak until April 24th. But after hundreds of residents of a town in Veracruz, Mexico, came down with its symptoms, the story had already hit the Mexican national press by April 5th. The daily La Jornada reported, quote, clouds of flies emanate from the rusty lagoons where the Carroll Ranch's business tosses the fecal wastes of its pig farms, and the open-air contamination is already generating an epidemic of respiratory infections in the town of La Gloria in the Perote Valley, according to town administrator Bertha Cristomomo Lopez. The town has 3,000 inhabitants, hundreds of whom reported severe flu symptoms in March, end quote. CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta, reporting from Mexico, has identified a La Gloria child who contracted the first case of identified swine flu in February as patient zero. He is 5-year-old Edgar Hernandez, now a survivor of the disease. By April 15th, 9 days before Mexican federal authorities of the regime of President Felipe Calderón acknowledged any problem at all, the local daily newspaper, Marcha, reported that a company called Carroll Ranches was, quote, the cause of the epidemic, end quote. La Jornada columnist Julio Hernandez Lopez connects the corporate dots to explain how the Virginia-based Smithfield Farms came to Mexico. In 1985, Smithfield Farms received what was at the time the most expensive fine in history, $12.6 million, for violating the U.S. Clean Water Act at its pig facilities near the Pagan River in Smithfield, Virginia, a tributary that flows into the Chesapeake Bay. The company, according to the EPA, dumped hog waste into the river. It was a case in which U.S. environmental law succeeded in forcing a polluter, Smithfield Farms, to construct a sewage treatment plant at that facility after decades of using the river as a mega toilet. But So-called free trade opened a path for Smithfield Farms to simply move its harmful practices next door into Mexico so that it could evade the tougher U.S. regulators. The North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, came into effect on January 1, 1994, the very same year Smithfield Farms opened the Carroll Ranches in the Mexican state of Veracruz to a new subsidiary corporation, Agroindustrias de Mexico. Unlike what law enforcers forced upon Smithfield Farms in the U.S., the new Mexican facility, processing 800,000 pigs into bacon and other products per year, the Mexican facility does not have a sewage treatment plant. According to Rolling Stone magazine, Smithfield slaughters an estimated 27 million hogs a year to produce more than 6 billion pounds of packaged pork products. Reporter Jeff Teets, for Rolling Stone, reported in 2006 on the conditions in Smithfield's U.S. facility. Now remember, what you're about to read describes conditions that are more sanitary and regulated than those in Mexico. Shall we read? Quote, Smithfield's pigs live by the hundreds or thousands in warehouse-like barns and rows of wall-to-wall pens. Sows are artificially inseminated and fed and delivered of their piglets in cages so small they cannot turn around. 40 fully grown, 250-pound male hogs often occupy a pen the size of a tiny apartment. They trample each other to death. There is no sunlight, straw, fresh air, or earth. The floors are slatted to allow excrement to fall into a catchment pit under the pens, but many things besides excrement can wind up in the pits. Afterbirths, piglets accidentally crushed by their mothers, old batteries, broken bottles of insecticide, antibiotic syringes, stillborn pigs, anything small enough to fit through the foot-wide pipes that drain the pits. The pipes remain closed until enough sewage accumulates in the pits to create good expulsion pressure. Then the pipes are opened, and everything bursts out into a large holding pond. The temperature inside hog houses is often hotter than 90 degrees. The air saturated almost to the point of precipitation with gases from excrement and chemicals can be lethal to the pigs. Enormous exhaust fans run 24 hours a day. The ventilation systems function like the ventilators of terminal patients. If they break down for any length of time, pigs start dying. Consider what happens when such forms of massive pork production move to unregulated territory where Mexican authorities allow wealthy interests to do business without adequate oversight, abusing workers and the environment both. And there it is, the violence wrought by NAFTA in clear and understandable human terms. The so-called swine flu exploded because an environmental disaster simply moved to Mexico, where environmental and worker safety laws, if they exist, are not enforced against powerful multinational corporations. False mental constructs of borders, the kind that cause U.S. and Mexican citizens alike to imagine a flu strain like this one invading their nations from other lands, are taking a long overdue hit by the current swine flu media frenzy. In this case, U.S.-Mexico trade policy created a time bomb in Veracruz that has already murdered more than 150 Mexican citizens and at least one child in the U.S. by creating a gigantic petri dish in the form of pig farms to generate bacon and ham for international sale. None of that indicates that this flu strain was born in Mexico, but rather that the North American Free Trade Agreement created the optimal conditions for the flu to gestate and become, at minimum, epidemic in La Gloria and now Mexico City, and threatens to become international pandemic. Welcome to the aftermath of free trade. Authorities now want you to grab a hospital face mask and avoid human contact until the outbreak hopefully blows over. And if you start to feel dizzy or a flush of fever or other symptoms begin to molest you or your children, remember this. The real name of this infirmity is the NAFTA flu. The first of what may well emerge as many new illnesses to emerge internationally as the direct result of so-called free trade agreements that allow companies like Smithfield Farms to escape health, safety, and environmental laws. Ooh. Uncle Mike's Story Corner was nasty tonight. Wasn't that fun? The NAFTA flu! Our writer is Al Giordano. We'll see you next time, kiddies, for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Uncle Mike's theme music ended very quickly. Abruptly. Is that it? Okay, in this next break, I think I have to use the bathroom, Kathy.
Can I get any sausage with that? Didn't you pull a hog hair one time?
I did pull a hog hair one time. It was an edifying experience pulling a hog hair. For those of you who live outside the deep south here, pulling a hog hair is, do you want me to tell that story? Does anybody want to hear the story of pulling a hog hair the night I pulled a hog hair?
Well, now you just have to.
Well, not really. Let's put it to a very quick vote. If you want me to pull a hog hair, just send me an email that says yes. If you don't, say no. Just send it to mike@mikemalloy.com. If you want to hear the story of my pulling a hog hair, send me an email that says yes. That's all. That's all. If you don't want to hear it, say no.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Okay, this is really a lopsided vote. We have 51 yeses and one no. So, okay. This goes back a number of years, back to the early 70s. And I was living here in Atlanta, and I had a good friend that lived in Moultrie, Georgia. And I had occasion to go visit him and his wife and kid, and they lived in a trailer, on the outskirts of Moultrie. And, we did what we had to do that day, and we were sitting around on his, back porch drinking Jack Daniels and Coca-Cola. And, his name was Jack, believe it or not. And, anyway, we were getting kind of drunk. And around 11:30 at night, he said, "Hey, you want to go pull a hog hair about midnight?" I said, "Pull a hog hair? What the hell are you talking about?" He said, "You never pulled a hog hair?" I said, "No, I've never pulled a hog hair." He said, "All right, I'll tell you what, you want to go?" I said, "Well, if it doesn't involve guns, yeah, I'll go." He said, "No, no guns." So he got on the phone, made a quick phone call, came back out of the trailer and out on the porch and sat down on the, and he said, "Okay, Jake will be here in about half an hour because he usually goes to pull a hog hair about midnight." I said, "Jake?" "Yeah, a friend of mine." So I said, "Okay." So we kept drinking and getting, you know, stupider. Long about midnight, sure enough, great big old 4-ton dump truck pulls up. Big sucker. Diesel. It looked like it was built in 1948. It looked like it was an old army truck or something that had been painted over. And now it's pitch dark, and he pulls into the trailer park, Jake does, and Jack and I jump out and go get in the truck. I get in the middle, and now, Jack and I are both just drunk as hell at this point. And Jake, I don't know about Jake. Jake says, hey, how you doing? I said, hi, my name's Mike. Hey, how you doing? You going with us to pull the hog hair, huh? And he looked over at Jack, you know, leaned up, and he looked over at Jack, who was sitting on the other side of the car, the cab, and he said, you sure you won't take this boy to pull the hog hair? And Jack said, yeah, I've known Malloy for a long time. Yeah, let's go pull the hog hair. So we drove out of the trailer park in this great big old 4-ton dump truck or whatever the hell it was. It could have been 20-ton. I don't know. And it was a pretty bouncy ride, and I'm starting to get a little nauseous. But we drove up to the Swift and Company slaughterhouse that was on the other side of Moultrie, on the other outskirts of Moultrie. And he backed the truck up underneath a huge hopper. Y'all know what a hopper is? It's a great big, like V-shaped containment thing. It's huge, about the size of a small bungalow. And it was sitting up in the air, and he backed the truck underneath this hopper. Well, I got out of the truck. I had to pee or something. I got out of the truck, and I wandered over where the holding pens were for the next day's slaughter. And I saw about, 500-600 hogs that were just waiting. And they knew. I mean, they were mounting each other. They were screaming. They were, it was smelly and it was awful. They knew that come morning they were going to walk up that gangplank and they were going to get the bolt in their forehead and become bacon. Well, anyway, I went back to the dump truck. And Jake backed up underneath it, and he got out of the truck, and he walked around. Over on the side of the Swift & Company building, there was like a chain. And he pulled the bolt out and released the chain. And there was this huge whoomp fell into the back of the 4-ton dump truck. I mean, it shook the truck, shook the ground, and scared the hell out of me. I said, Jesus Christ, what was that? He said, man, we're about to pull a hog hair. So I got up in the truck with him because he said, come on, get on. So we got on, got back in the cab of the truck. What it was the all day slaughtering, hogs in the Swift & Company, meatpacking plant. What was left over was mostly the bristles, the hair. Everything else pretty much was cut up and packaged, and everything from pig's feet to their tongues to their insides, everything was gone. The only thing left was all these bristles. Just, I don't know, 4 tons of hog bristles and other kinds of offal. So he started to pull the dump truck out of Swift & Company parking lot. And I'm sitting there in the middle. Now I'm really drunk, man, because now I've got to, you know, Jack, give me that goddamn bottle. Had another couple of drinks, and we're heading down the highway. I said, where are we going? He said, we're pulling hog hair, bro. I said, we're pulling a hog hair. So we drove to the other side of Moultrie. There's 4 outskirts of Moultrie. We got to the other side and turned off the highway onto what they called in South Georgia a shell road. It's made out of crushed up shells and sand and stuff. And we drove down the shell road till that ran out and became a dirt road. And we drove down the dirt road. Meanwhile, we're driving deeper and deeper and deeper into this pine forest. And the dirt road then becomes nothing except a track. And then the track disappears and there's a full moon out. And I'm saying, damn, where are we going? And Jake said, what's the matter, boy? You getting scared? And we pulled up to this huge pit. It was a monster pit dug into the dirt. And he backed the four-ton dump up. God damn. He backed up the 4-ton dump truck to the edge of the pit. And he turned on the motor thing that makes that dump truck start, you know, the back of it start to lift up. It starts to lift up because they're going to dump into this pit. I said, holy Jesus, what are you doing? He said, I'm dumping all these hog hairs down into that pit, and nobody can know about it because this is just illegal as hell, and they pay me $300 to do this. $300 a week. All I have to do is show up at midnight and load this sucker up, and we drive out here, and boy, this is called pulling a hog hair. And I stood up on the dash or on the running board of the truck, and I looked out there, and I swear to God, I saw haints and spirits of thousands, nay, millions of hogs rising up out of that hole, that huge hole in the earth that was filling up with more hog remains. And the pine forest was all around us, and the moon was streaming down, and Jack was drunk, and I'm drunk. And all of a sudden, Jake gets out his .44 caliber pistol. I said, Jack, you told me there was no guns going to be involved. And Jake said, this ain't a gun. This is what I kill them goddamn ghosts with. Bam, 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 bam.
and the sound blend together. It's the music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now. Feel alive. Listen to the tide slowly turning. Wash away your heart.
Anybody still listening? If you are, welcome back. This is the Malloy Program. I'm Mike Malloy. I'll never forget that. Pulling a hog here. Bob Kincaid at headonradionetwork.com. Have you not gone there? Headonradionetwork.com. Bob writes, Mike, this note is likely to be a digression, but I'll go on anyway. It is indeed the NAFTA flu. Everything that you shared, I think it means the Giordano article, is absolutely correct. But what does it mean? How do we at least not participate in the NAFTA nightmare? Here's a cautionary tale. For those who don't know, I'm a hillbilly. Southern-born, southern-bred hillbilly. And we hillbillies like things like hog jowl. Lordy, we love it. Better than bacon, sold in hunks you have to slice yourself. It's the aesthetic equivalent in a pot of beans or turnip greens of cream in your coffee. On New Year's Day, it's the sine qua non of the rest of the whole superstitious year for hill folks like me and mine. For those of us watching our cholesterol, it's the blue steel on a porcine Russian roulette revolver. So what? So good hog jowl is something about which a hillbilly can wax eloquent. So I found some. Cumberland Gap is the brand. I bought a ton of it. Downright brand loyal I am. And then the hammer fell. The other day, while researching Granjas Carol, the Smithfield meats captive in Mexico where the flu was born in the filth and excrescence, I saw an Our Brands link on the Smithfield homepage. And there it was, Cumberland Gap, a Smithfield brand. As we say in the hills, I'd done been had. I thought Cumberland Gap was its own corporate thing, but it wasn't. It's just another corporate captive. Remember back last Thanksgiving when we found out our blessed Thanksgiving turkey probably came from China? And we hollered for country of origin labeling. Is that cool? To hell with cool, Mike. We need corporation of origin labeling. For all I know, that hunk of jowl in my fridge has the damn flu. And I don't know if it's cured by turnip greens. Bob. Yeah, corporation of origin, country of origin. I was buying orange juice for Christ's sake. I live in Georgia. The next state down is Florida. I was buying orange juice, premium brand of orange juice in the supermarket the other day. And I read all the labels now as best I, you know, I won't buy stuff unless I know where it's from. I can't. And it said, oranges from the United States, Brazil, and Costa Rica. Oh, okay. Why not Florida? Well, you can buy. I buy Florida's own. That's all I buy now. Now they're guaranteeing me. They may be lying like sons of bitches, but they're guaranteeing to me that it's Florida orange juice. What did I hear on the TV today? Granola bars have ingredients in them. Kathy, you'll appreciate this since Molly eats granola bars, those little snack things we give her in the car to keep her quiet sometimes. Ingredients in the granola bars from 6 countries. This doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Why are we buying turkeys from China and granola bars from God knows where and orange juice from Brazil? I've got nothing against the Brazilians. I think Costa Rica is a lovely country, especially since they did away with their military generations ago or whenever. Did they ever have one? But, you know, this is... It is very, to say the least, frustrating, maddening. Makes you insane. Makes me insane. If I buy olives and they're from Spain or Italy, oh, okay, that's fine because I'm buying Spanish olives. Duh. Italian olives. Okay. But if you buy a hunk of meat, like a turkey, or in Bob's case, a hog jowl. I'm sorry, Bob. Can't do it. We've got supermarkets. Well, not supermarkets. We have butcher shops around here where, they have ears for sale and feet and tongues and snouts the first time Molly saw pig feet or hog feet, whatever the hell it is, laying in a display case, she just about ran screaming out of the store. Piglet! Daddy! Piglet! Ah! Ah! We go to a farmer's market that is, I don't think anything in it is grown in America. It's a farmer's market. It's an international farmer's market. Well, I guess some of it's grown in America, sure. I mean, you know, but they have stuff from all over the world there. And we got to stop going there, Kathy. We just have to. But Molly likes to go in there and look in the tanks where the crawfish and the lobsters, and over here it's catfish, and over here it's things that move slowly. And you know, I'll hoist Molly up so she can look. You know, she, Daddy, I want to see the animals when we go in there. But then that was fine when she was three. But now she's almost five, and she looks in there and she says, why is that one floating upside down? Is it dead? But on the other hand, you know, when we sit down to codfish or grouper, she's making the connection. She's making the connection. Where was I? I lost it again.
But I am not the least bit hungry.
No, I'm not either. No midnight snack tonight. No, honey. I've got an email here from Brian about in Norristown, PA, about Arlen Specter's switchover. Not that anybody cares. I think I made that clear the other night. It really doesn't matter what party Arlen Specter is in, except for the fact that if the Democratic Party leadership works him properly, you know, strokes him, Specter has one of the most quivering egos. He's kind of like the guy from Bob Kincaid's home state. Who's the senator? Yeah, in West Virginia. Who is that? You know who I mean. Oh, God, don't anybody send me an email because we'll come up with it here. You know, the constitutional expert. Yeah, Bird. Bird. How you gonna forget the name Bird, for God's sake? He's got a massive ego, too. It's only because Senator Bird is like, you know, one foot in the grave, other on a banana peel, that they were able to slide his chairmanship away from him. The guy's been in there since Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves. But what's his name? Specter really is. He's egomaniacal. That certainly doesn't make him unique in the Senate by any means, or the House for that matter. But Brian in Norristown, PA, sent me this email, and I want to show it to you, or share it with you when we come back after this break, because it is. For folks who don't know, Brian just gives a couple of quick sentences here about where Arlen Specter stands on certain key issues. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Chicken, but a friend that I need, yet the food tastes great, so you don't complain. But that's not chicken in your chicken chow mein. Seems to me I ordered sweet and sour pork, but Garfield's on my fork. He's purring here on my fork. There's a cat in the kettle at the picking room, the place that I eat every day at noon. They can feed your cat and you'll never know, once they wrap it up in dough, boy, they fry it real crisp in dough.
Shaolin asked if I wanted more as he was dialing up his buddy at the old pet store. I said, not today, I lost my appetite. There's two cats in my belly and they want to fight. I was sucking on a rolling in a Tums or two. Well, I swear I heard it, new boy.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Brian in Norristown, PA writes, Mike, first, thanks for keeping the fire going every night despite all the uncertainty. I bought a podcast subscription as soon as they were available because most of the time I feel like you're the only voice who feels the same frustrations I feel. Well, thanks, Brian. About Arlen Specter's switch. I personally do not see what everyone is so excited about. Arlen Specter did this for one reason, and that person is Arlen Specter. His fear of being finally put out to pasture is what motivated him to make this decision. I live in PA currently, and Specter is my senator. He is tolerable on some issues, but do we really need another Ben Nelson? Should we celebrate another shift to the right of the Democratic Party? Listening to him pine for Bush's judicial nominees and defend his opposition to the Employee Free Choice Act in his announcement made me sick to my stomach. Specter is in favor of a flat tax. In 2005-2006, Specter received a 0% rating from Citizens for Tax Justice. The vampires at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce gave him an 82% approval in 2007 and 100% approval in 2006. The ACLU gave him a 43% in 2007-2008. The League of Conservation Voters gave him a 46% in 2007-2008. He doesn't think people should have a license to possess a gun. He's against background checks at gun shows. He's against requiring gun manufacturers to provide child safety locks. He is for drilling in the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge. He is against the creation of a Palestinian state. He is against withdrawal of our troops from Iraq. He supports NAFTA and GATT. Obviously, there are very few, if any, who get it right on all of these issues, but much like McCain, Specter is a master of the bait and switch, which has earned him a reputation for bucking his party. There are certainly times when he deserves praise for going against the Republican radicals, but more often than not, he held the party line in the end. Take his flip-flop on the Employee Free Choice Act as example number one. If his switch comes with a change in direction, great. If not, I will be supporting whatever Democrat has the cojones to challenge him in the primary. Thanks again, Brian.
I don't think
people who are familiar with Specter's voting record have any illusions about the guy. And not even his voting record, just his rhetoric. I have no idea what his voting record is. Not to the degree that Brian does, because obviously I'm more focused on the cheeseheads that live here. Oh wait, that's a nice term up in Green Bay. Never mind. The freaks that represent Georgia in the House and the Senate for the most part. But Arlen Specter is one thing I have to give him credit for. He didn't try to hide the fact that he was switching parties because he wants to be in the Senate again, and he knows that he'll be removed in the primary coming up in Pennsylvania, because the crazy people in Pennsylvania will run a radical right-winger who does not have a chance of winning in the general election, but they'll run a radical right-wing, you know, mouth breather in the primary against a Republican Arlen Specter. And the crazy people who represent the Republican Party now, even down on the voting level, will vote for the mouth breather. And poor old Arlen will find himself, retired. So, but my point is, he didn't try to hide that. He more or less said, look, this is the Arlen Specter Employment Act. That's all it is. That's the reason I'm switching parties. And he was very clear and very open and very upfront. That's got to be a little bit refreshing, you know, not much, but a little bit. So, if the Democrats in Pennsylvania really wanted to let the country know to an even greater degree, and the country is already letting itself know that we have had enough of these goddamn Republicans. What the Democrats in Pennsylvania would do would be to challenge Specter in a Democratic primary and run against him, a real liberal. Pennsylvania is a working class state. How could they possibly vote for somebody who's against the Employee Free Choice Act that will allow union members a chance, or potential union members a chance to organize? Oh, and by the way, just a little postscript to that. Did you hear today that in the bankruptcy filing for Chrysler Corporation, that the United Auto Workers is going to wind up owning half the new company? Oh, and Fiat will own about 25%. I don't know who will own the other 25%, but oh my goodness, is this the first example of workers seizing the means of production in the United States? Well, you know what that means, don't you? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. I get some pleasure to hate me. I've been up for any of my fate. People might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging to your facts. You see, here's what you get. You made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leaders and place your trust. Set lies will go down and their promises rust. There's a killing with trees with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give up this society wants. I'm going underground.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, pardon moi. This is from where's Think Progress? A couple of things here. Secession Ready Texas has received the most federal disaster assistance of any state. That's the headline. It says just weeks after declaring that Texas might secede from the union because, quote, the federal government has become oppressive. End quote. Governor Rick Perry today asked for more federal aid when he issued a disaster declaration because of the swine flu. Mother Jones writer Jonathan Stein found that since the beginning of FEMA's record keeping, Texas has actually received the most federal assistance from FEMA than any other state. Here they are. Number 10, this is number of disasters declared and money received. Number 10 is Arkansas. Number 9, Missouri. Number 8, Alabama. Number 7, Kentucky. Number 6, Louisiana. You notice a pattern there. Oops. Number 5, New York. Number 4, Oklahoma. Number 3, Florida. Number 2, California. Number 1, Texas. A FEMA spokesman told Jonathan Stein that, quote, a major disaster declaration is issued when a governor determines the state's resources are overrun, end quote. FEMA reimburses at least 75% of the state's recovery cost, but currently the federal government is covering 100% of the Hurricane Ike recovery effort in Texas. What you going to do, Rick? Huh? You going to get old Karate Boy there to, what, open up a kick-ass theme park, bring in the Yahoos from up in Oklahoma, huh?
and New Mexico and Louisiana. Come on over and spend some money. And Jesus, what the Republicans are just, I don't know. I've never seen anything like Republicans. We have two pieces of sound I want to play for you. Is it two, Kathy? I think it's two. This is from Obama's primetime press conference last night. The entire press conference was measured and detailed, and you know, he was good. He covered all aspects of national interest, from swine flu to the economy, energy, health care. But the part that had the deepest implications on the future of this nation and our global image related to the previous administration's torture practices, right? Reporter says, Mr. President, you've said in the past that waterboarding, in your opinion, is torture. Torture is a violation of international law and the Geneva Conventions. Do you believe that the previous administration sanctioned torture?
What I've said, and I will repeat, is that waterboarding violates our ideals and our values. I do believe that it is torture. I don't think that's just my opinion. That's
right.
The opinion of many who've examined the topic.
That's right. Okay.
And that's why I put an end to these practices.
And we thank you. Yeah.
I am absolutely convinced it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, we agree.
Not because there might not have been information that was yielded by these various detainees who were subjected
to this
treatment.
Mr. President.
But because we could have gotten this information in other ways.
But my question.
In ways that were consistent with our values.
Yeah, but my
In ways that were consistent with who we are.
Okay. But the question, Your Honor, was about the previous administration. You know, do you believe they sanctioned torture, sir? Hello? Oh, damn, he left. So another reporter asked about the torture practices. This reporter said, let me follow up, if I may, on Jake's question. Did you read the documents recently referred to by former Vice President Cheney and others saying that the use of so-called enhanced interrogation techniques not only protected the nation but saved lives? And if part of the United States were under imminent threat, could you envision yourself ever authorizing the use of those enhanced interrogation techniques, you know, like they do on that famous Fox program 24?
The public reports and the public justifications for these techniques, which is that we got information from these individuals that were subjected to these techniques, doesn't answer the core question, which is, could we have gotten that same information without resorting to these techniques?
Yeah, but Mr. President.
And it doesn't answer the broader question,
right.
Are we safer as a consequence of having used these techniques?
Okay,
so when I made the decision to release these memos,
yeah,
and when I made the decision to bar these practices,
right.
This was based on consultation with my entire national security team.
Yeah, okay.
And based on my understanding that ultimately I will be judged as commander-in-chief.
Yes.
On how safe I'm keeping the American people.
But
so I will do whatever is required to keep the American people safe.
Torture?
But I am absolutely convinced
but
the best way I can do that
is to make
sure that we are not taking shortcuts that undermine who we are.
What? Oh, my brain hurts. Well, Your Honor, Mr. President, what did you just say? You know, he asked the question in that answer, could we have gotten the information, I'm not sure what the information was, without resorting to torture. Well, actually, no, because those techniques were designed to obtain false information, to justify a false link between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, thereby justifying an illegal invasion of Iraq. So the answer is torture, Your Honor, is the only way to elicit false information. But the real question is, are we going to hold the torturers accountable, Mr. President, for their war crimes and the deaths of so many Americans and innocent Iraqis that resulted from this false intelligence that Cheney brags about? Mr. President, Mr. Barack Obama, that's the question.
And I'm sorry it was Jake Tapper and whoever this other guy is, because probably Ed Henry, because, you know, Jake Tapper, Ed Henry, and who's the other guy? The Three Musketeers just don't like the fact that you're all about the same age and you're the president, and they just had their paychecks cut. But the question is a valid question. It really is, Mr. President, and you're not answering. When you are asked, a question, do you believe the previous administration sanctioned torture? Why don't you stun the world and just say yes? Is it because the follow-up question would be, so what are you going to do about it? I know it's difficult being the President of the United States. Well, I don't know that. I'm guessing it's probably very difficult, Mr. Obama. But good God. How about just an answer? Just once. Do you believe that they committed torture? Yes. Oh, what's this? Betsy sent this in. Another one of these filthy conservative talk radio geeks was suspended today after blaming swine flu on what he called the millions of leeches from Mexico. This comes via Think Progress. Conservative talker Jay Severin, oh, that crazy psychopath, was suspended indefinitely today by Boston's WTKK-FM after using the current swine flu outbreak to attack Mexicans and immigrants. On his radio show, Severin blamed the swine flu on what he called some of the world's lowest of primitives in Mexico. This is what he said. So now, in addition to venereal disease and the other leading exports of Mexico, women with mustaches and VD, now we have swine flu. We should be, if anything, surprised is that Mexico has not visited upon us poxes of more various and serious types, considering the number of criminal aliens already here. When they scoop up some of the world's lowest of primitives in poor Mexico and drop it down the middle of the United States, poor without skills, without language, not share our culture, not share our hygiene. It's millions of leeches from a primitive country. Now they're exporting a rather more active form of disease, which is the swine flu. Oh, my God. Now, despite those comments, of course, Severin's agent believes that Severin will be back on the air doing great radio soon. Jesus Christ. And we sit here and struggle every single day and night to keep this program going, and pieces of just pig offal like Jay Severin works for an honest to God radio station, probably gets paid, but he's paid enough to have an agent, right? Oh, my God. I remember Jay Severin. He's the guy that looks like a wolf. He was one of the real attack chihuahuas during the Clinton impeachment hearings back in the late 90s. Real brave guy, you know. Bark, 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 bark. Attacking the entire country of Mexico. That's great. That's real cool, you dumb bastard. When did the guitars come in here? Oh, there are no guitars. It's just that. Hey, yeah, I know, I forgot again tonight to take phone calls. I apologize. We're just about out of time, another 6 minutes or so. Thanks to the crew, Kathy Bay, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Bruce Enberg, all of whom have specific and well-paid roles in the production of this program. Kathy just shot me the bird. What does that mean?
Hi, my name is Kathy. I'll be your server tonight.
Right. If you are not a podcast subscriber, we would like you to become one. Go to MikeMalloy.com. And the means and the method to become a podcast subscriber are all there. That means you will be contributing 25 cents per program for the Malloy Show, and you will have it delivered to your computer without commercials, or delivered anywhere you want it delivered. We'll deliver it to your bathtub. You know, it doesn't make any difference to us, but it will cost you 25 cents per program. And that works out to under $60 a year. Take your spouse and your kids or your partner and your nieces and nephews and go to a movie and see if you can do one movie and see if you can do it for $60. I know we can't, not here in Atlanta anymore. So anyway, no guilt trips, no attempts to shame you into anything. The Malloy program will survive if our podcast subscribers reach a certain level. We are almost at the break-even level. We had a great start, and then things kind of, I don't know, maybe I've been doing crappy shows or something, Kathy. All of a sudden, the numbers started to slow down a little bit, you know, kind of like a bell curve. And we need to get it back up again. So if you would consider spending 25 cents per program on an annual basis, it's under $60 a year. All the necessary information is at MikeMalloy.com, how you can do this. It's not just the podcast, but also Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag and some other things that are on their way. I promise you they are on their way. So we need your support. We don't need a contribution. We need your support, and this is a way to do it. Subscribe to the Malloy podcasts and the other items that will be available for people who do take a subscription. 25 cents a show, folks. And for you right-wingers out there, this is one way you can prove that the Malloy program is just two-bit garbage, right? We'll take your money, too.
I wanted to emphasize, because sometimes I think all the hog hair pulling in your past may have made you forget, commercial-free podcast.
Oh, that's
and,
right. Yeah, yeah.
And Mother's Day, Father's Day, graduation
no, don't,
gifts.
No, don't.
Come on now.
No,
they're
don't.
All coming up.
No, don't
give
do
the
that.
Gift of Malloy, gift that keeps on giving
no,
for
don't.
An entire year.
No. Do some other. No, some other way. Some other way. Not
wouldn't a. Mom or Dad like a little taste
no,
of
No, no, no. Stop. Not gifts. No. Please don't. You know, I hate that. All right, very quickly, a second missive from Prairie 2. I missed it the other night. Prairie 2 writes, great headlines in the news from the economy. Durable goods orders weren't down as much as expected. Are you kidding? The numbers are terrible, and they'd be worse except that huge orders for military aircraft gave a bump to the numbers. Nobody's buying the kinds of things that you would need to replace worn-out equipment, let alone preparing for future growth. Numbers for consumer goods continue the spiral toward the bottom unabated as unemployment continues to climb. Uh-oh, China has revealed that it has been quietly buying gold and now holds over 1,000 tons. That's about 10% of its currency reserves at current prices. China has been buying anything that they can from anybody that will take dollars, even handing out free money to its trading partners in South America to lessen the damage to their own economies from the collapse of the bloated behemoth to the north. They're also starting to hand out Chinese currency. And since they have manufactured goods to sell, their currency is actually worth something, not to mention their gold reserves. China is rapidly expanding its deep water navy and now has 10, count them, 10 nuclear submarines. They also have begun construction of their first aircraft carrier. Instead of nuclear power, they will burn surplus dollar bills in the boiler. Our own masters of the universe told us how great America was and how patriotic they were. You could tell by the flag pins on their lapels, pins that are made in Yeah. All they were really doing was lining their pockets by gutting our manufacturing base. They sold China all our technology, no matter how sensitive, saying they were bringing democracy to China. China didn't become democratic, and for 8 years, we weren't either. Now we have a new arms race that could have been avoided. Of course, if we build any new weapons, we will need to buy computer chips and parts from China. I guess I should sign up for those Chinese lessons and beat the rush. Pray too. Go to his website. He doesn't charge you 25 cents a program. PrairieNumeral2.com. All right, folks, we're just about ready to put this baby to bed. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. I do appreciate it. And again, my apologies for not opening up the lines. I just got carried away. I don't know how I got on that pull hog hair stuff. I don't know. Well, tomorrow's Friday, so we'll do lots of phone calls tomorrow night if you are so inclined. And also, if you're so inclined, do visit MikeMalloy.com and do become a podcast subscriber. All right? It is not expensive. I hate to say it's cheap because that kind of reflects on the program. All right. It's cheap. 25 cents per show. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.